From the Len DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of December, 2024. I'm Todd Gleason, traveling with the Farm Doc team for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Today, we're in Peoria. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Naomi Bloom. She's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Indiana. Gary Schnitke will have some strategies for dealing with low-income years. That's the presentation he's making on these Illinois Farm Economic Summits. And then we'll talk with Dave Chatterton about the agricultural energies and hear too from Don Day about the agricultural weather, all on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Naomi Bloom now joins us from TotalFarmMarketing.com. She's out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Happy winter break. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you. Starting next Tuesday, next Tuesday. We won't be talking to her the following Tuesday. We won't as well because the markets are, they're open, but I'm going to be gone those days. Hey, thank you, too, for being with us today, Naomi. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the marketplace. How has it reacted to news out of Washington, D.C. that there may be some potential for year-round E15? Now, this is something that could be in the bill that they're working on for disaster aid, though we've not yet seen the text of that bill at this point. Did the market make any notice of it at all?
We have not seen any excitement about that news. Grain prices just inching a little lower today with more range trading happening with corn, and soybean prices seeing a sell-off with technical selling once we broke support levels. It just feels like any news out of Washington, people maybe don't believe it, because does it ever come to fruition right away? So it's almost like they're waiting to see if something really actually occurs before being excited about it, because we've gotten our hopes up before and nothing ever comes of it. So it feels like that maybe is what the market is starting to deal with, along with the reality that the weather in South America continues to be pretty darn perfect. And we're just running out of bullish news, so path of least resistance a little lower. And to your point, maybe that holiday trade already starting to occur.
Yeah. So what are you telling producers when they call and talk to you about their situation on the farm, the amount of grain that they have left to sell, both corn, soybeans, maybe wheat as well, and how they ought to enter the end of this calendar year and continue through the marketing year?
Yeah, we're actually starting to look at a little bit more of a defensive mindset. With March corn futures getting up to that 450 price point last week, that's just a huge hurdle to be able to climb over, and some big bullish news would need to have happened to get prices above that. We would need to hear new demand news. We would need to see bad weather in South America. So we're seeing that pullback, and I think a lot of cash grain got sold last week. And then when looking at the December contract was able to get just a little higher than the 440 price point, but then ran into some resistance there as well. And trade is already quite well aware that we're very likely to see bigger corn acres planted in the spring next year. So that kind of steals some of the thunder for the marketplace. And then looking over at the bean side of things, again, with 470 million bushel carryout, it's a comfortable number without any weather issues in South America, and global carryout at record large numbers. That soybean story just not getting any fresh news. And now there's this big head and shoulders formation on the daily chart that if the support line broke, potentially could point to about a dollar lower for prices. Now, it doesn't mean it has to happen overnight, but it is just something that the traders are battling right now. So defensive strategies, cash sale talking, that's been the focus of the conversation.
How much time do you think there might be when you look at that head and shoulders, and just in the marketplace, corn and soybeans both? We're going into winter break, holiday trade. And then as soon as we come out, you start to look forward to the USDA January final crop production report, the WASDE, World Ag Supply Demand Estimates, as well as grain stocks and the wheat numbers all come out on, I think, the 10th day of January. So how much time do we have before the market tends to react if there's not a weather or some other kind of push?
Well, I mean, to your point, if we, that USDA report in January might only be the next catalyst for market news, and in which case between now and then, which is, you know, good 3, potentially 4 weeks, prices might just work lower. And while past performance is not indicative of future results, we saw this last year, and there was a huge head and shoulders formation on the soybean charts a year ago at this time. And then once we came back from Christmas, the real sell-off occurred, and the market traded lower, had a little bit of a recovery bounce for about a week in January, but ultimately the soybean prices ended up trading lower till late February. So the head and shoulders formation came to fruition, and it took about 2 months' time to happen. So again, it doesn't need to go straight down, but if we don't get a lack of friendly, or if we can't find some friendly news, then I think that just weighs on the market price and we just grind lower.
So Daryl Good used to tell us continually that the market was needed to be considered as normal, the crop in particular, and we're talking about the South American crop at this point, until it wasn't. Is that what farmers should be in the United States thinking about at this time, that the soybean crop in Brazil is normal and that they need to market based off of that? That would give them an edge, relatively speaking, because they have a crop in the bin, though prices are low at this point.
Yes, we absolutely need to be thinking that with the crop not having a weather issue, it's fine until proven otherwise. And so be mindful of that with your marketing, because that's what traders are focusing on now, too. There isn't a weather issue happening in Brazil. It's getting a little drier in Argentina, but it's not enough to become a market mover at this time. So stay defensive. And then as we start to flip the calendar into January and then into February, you brought up the USDA Outlook Forum. That's when they always come out with these huge acres and perfect planting and perfect yield and record yield. And so that just adds to the negativity during the month of February. So really, in order to get this market turned around, we need some new demand news coming in, or we need the weather in South America to turn hot and dry pretty darn quick. Otherwise, right now the world is assuming that we have enough supply out there, and that weighs on the marketplace, along with the uncertainty of the new administration coming in and what that might mean for potential tariffs, if there are any. So again, my bias right now is to be just defensive until proven otherwise.
And we have about half a minute left or so. Any quick word on livestock?
Got a cattle on feed report coming out on Friday afternoon. On feed estimate came out at 99.9, placement estimate at 95.9, and the marketed number at 98.1 for pre-report estimates. The cattle market put in a huge bearish key reversal yesterday, maybe trying to give us a technical top here in the short term. But Friday's report, I think, ultimately dictates which way this price move is going to occur for the livestock market for cattle and feeder cattle.
Thank you so much. We'll talk with you again after the holidays.
All right. Thank you.
That's Naomi Bloom. She is with TotalFarmMarketing.com. As you know, I'm traveling this week with the Farm Doc team at the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. Gary Schnicki is with us, agricultural economist. We talked to him many times on Tuesdays, and that's what we're going to do today, except not about something he's written for the Farm Doc Daily website. That's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, but rather about the presentation he made. One of the things that I've seen you say three times, actually four times, because you did it in Peoria, too, at the Greater Peoria Farm Show, was that as farmers and others were thinking about the future and what income looks like and how to manage low income years and number of years, was that you should just not be proud and take every government payment that is available. Can you tell me why?
Yeah, so you know, it's a low income to point of view, and that income or those receipts for payments from federal sources are important to maintain our health of our farm. They'll be important there. And you know, honestly, this is just a competitive sort of thing. If an individual farmer doesn't take those payments, they put themselves at a disadvantage to other farmers who do. And cash rents would likely be lower, and everything will be lower. So, you know, if and some farmers, and you can respect this, don't want to take federal payments, but you're in a market, you're in a place or sector where those are important.
This coming, and we're at the beginning of it, low income set of years, however long it has, will last. It could end soon, it could end 6, 10 years from now, whatever that case might be. It differs a little bit, and I think most of them do, from previous ones because farmers and landowners are in a better position, I believe, coming into this.
If we look at the financial positions of farms, they're in extremely strong position. Our debt to asset ratios overall are low, and our working capital positions are high. So there's a lot of financial wherewithal out there on farms. So that's a bit different even than 2012, 2013, when we were strong, but we're stronger today than we were back then. The question then really is, if the returns that we see, prices stay at the levels that they are at, and costs remain at the levels that they're at, we're going to see that erode. And is that something that we want to continue to do?
No, so it is an extended period could be difficult where you're burning through the cash reserves that you have built up through some good years. And unlike previous years, farms aren't leveraged heavily. They don't have big interest payments they're working through. So the government payments are one ways to help stave off that. Also, as you mentioned, it does keep probably both the price of farmland and the price of inputs a little bit higher for longer. So it is a double-edged sword too. And another reason that you need to stay competitive and manage all of those possible sources of income that you can get to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, we're reports are this morning that Congress is coming close to having a $2 billion aid package, which would be probably $10, $15 in here in Illinois. That's a significant payment across farms. And again, when landowners see those payments coming into farmers, they're less inclined to reduce cash rents. Seed, fertilizer, and chemical dealers are less inclined to lower the price of their inputs.
So beyond that, what are the strategies, and just fairly quickly tick them off, that you think producers can use to help manage income in these years?
Yeah, so we listed two. One is be a low-cost producer, which is something we always say, but it is really an attitude. And I think what we have to switch away from is this attitude of maximizing yields to maximizing returns. We need good yields. I mean, there is absolutely no doubt about it. But we might be spending a lot of money getting 2 to 5 bushels that are costing us a lot of input costs that would be simply better to not get 240, instead shoot for 237. Those additional bushels are just kind of hard to get at. So be a low-cost producer. And the second thing is reassess the land strategies that exist out there. We see that the return to rented farmland for a farmer has stayed the same across time. We need to see those cash rents come down. Actually, they went up 20% since 2020. Getting them back to 2020 levels would impact our profitability quite a bit, and we just simply need to reassess those strategies.
Thank you much.
Thanks, Todd, for having me.
Gary Schnittke is an agricultural economist traveling with the FarmDoc team on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Each Tuesday, we try to have a conversation about the agricultural energies. Today, we're joined by Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. Hi, Dave. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Todd. It's good to be with you here on what turned out to be finally a sunny day here in Champaign, and a warm one at that.
Yeah, and sunny here in Peoria. A really nice day. We'll be headed to DeKalb, by the way, for those of you who have not yet visited with the Illinois Farm Economic Summit FarmDoc team. You can still catch up with us tomorrow. You can go to willag.org. It's $100. May as well get yourself registered if you're going to come, because we're just going to have you scan a QR code and go on, do that on your phone. It's easier probably on a desktop or a tablet. So if you're going to come, be sure to show up tomorrow at the Burisma Alumni Center on the Northern Illinois University campus in DeKalb. Let's talk a little bit about what's been happening in the ag energies, Dave. What things have you been watching closely? I know there's news this morning that we may have, and we have not seen the text of the bill as the time you and I are talking, we may have year-round E15 as part of the disaster aid bill that looks like it may be passed by Congress to kick the can down the road a little bit for funding the government in general. But that is included, and that would be a good thing nationwide.
Yeah, Todd, it's currently part of the funding, you know, process, or the bill that's going to go forward here. We're not expecting a vote until probably Thursday evening at the earliest regarding, you know, the farm bill and what may be the disaster relief. So I think there's still a lot of fluidity here in the situation, and things could certainly change. But as of right now, that's one of the olive branches that we've gotten extended that's been included in the package. And so year-round E15 is something that the industry has been fighting for some time now. Having that included, it's unfortunately not a huge, increase in corn demand. At least, you know, out of the gate, you're probably talking about somewhere between 20 and 40 million bushels of additional corn for ethanol grind in a full E15 situation. But it is definitely a step in the right direction, and you know, we'll take whatever policy, provisions we can get that help with that. Especially as we're winding into the end of the year, still waiting on guidance on the biofuel policy for 2025 within 45Z and some of the things that happen in the biodiesel space.
Yeah, just so people understand how much that really is, about 5 billion bushels used for ethanol production. So an extra 20 to 40 million, 40 million bushels makes a difference. It really does. But in the grand scheme, it's just not that large of a number when you're talking about 5 billion bushels being used in ethanol. So what are you watching closely at this time as it's related to consumption of and or production of ethanol or other products?
Yeah, in the ethanol space, Todd, I mean, things have been going along nicely. We saw the USDA last week increase their full year ethanol, projection for the crop year, 24-25 to that 5.5 billion that you talked about. Roughly, if we look at the performance year to date since the crop year started in September, ethanol demand has been good and production has been, near record value. So we're on the path to get to that number, and demand, we're seeing prices do what they should do. In other words, relatively cheap commodity prices, and in this case, corn, are stimulating demand both on the export front and within the domestic, processing side. And those are things that we need to see going forward. Interestingly, though, that ethanol demand that we're talking about isn't really coming from U.S. gasoline blending. U.S. gasoline demand year over year is about flat. The blending rate has been stuck at just over that 10% E10 blend wall here for the better part of a decade. What we're finding is that ethanol exports out of the U.S. are finally, gaining some traction, have been a big part of the demand picture here. And there's some questions of that, of course, going forward as we go into the Trump era and what will be, sanctions, tariffs, trade wars, and currency issues, and who knows what. But Interestingly enough, of those exports, ethanol exports, excuse me, Canada has taken almost half of those. And of course, they're one of the direct, you know, out of the gate, Trump threatening 25% tariffs against Canada. It looks like we're at the table with some of their leaders here currently. Hopefully any of that can be avoided. But it's an interesting situation here. Ethanol margins domestically have been under a little bit of pressure here. We've been seeing the gasoline market generally rotate flat to a little bit lower here. And so producer margins are not particularly spiffy here at the moment. And certainly we could see that side of the complex slow down here just a little bit.
That would be typical seasonal kind of yearly things that happen or not?
Yeah, to a degree, certainly it is. And I mean, we get into this end of the year time period and there's a lot of games being played with taxes and barrels and moving different product around and those kind of things. We're in a situation where the holiday driving period is not as big as it used to be in the U.S. And typically we're in a little bit of a shoulder period for demand where we would be looking for the market to kind of make some price lows in the petroleum complex, Todd, and then rebound as we go into the new year. As we look forward into the new year here, petroleum prices is I'll call them basically range bound since mid-October. We're kind of caught between, you know, the OPEC supply cuts, I think, on top of the market in a big amount of, you know, over, you know, there's 2.2 million barrels per day of cuts that are on the table, plus some spare capacity behind that. And then, you know, we've got a weak Chinese economy here that's been affecting the ideas about global demand. So we're going nowhere in a hurry, but when we put that in the frame of what it might mean seasonally, like I said, we do typically look for a rebound after the first of the year. I think that could be complicated a little bit this year by the geopolitical and the global economic situation.
And finally, very quickly, do you suppose that producers should find a place where they might lock in the price of some of their inputs for energy?
Well, I think if you're happy with those inputs, I think that's fine. In our particular case, we are, as we sit today, kind of in the middle of that two-month range that we spoke about, maybe working down towards the bottom third here just a little bit. But we're going to be a little bit patient here, Todd, I think, with our particular our usage here. When we look at U.S. production kind of at a high right now, Trump as a, we'll call it, for lack of a better term, drill baby drill type of an attitude and the amount of spare capacity that's in the marketplace, there's a supply glut, if you will, or a little bit of an additional spare capacity above the market here that I think that keeps the price in check. And we're going to try and extend that window just a little bit here.
Thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
Dave Chatterton is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural weather. Don Day is here. Thanks, Don. What do you see?
The best way to describe the weather leading up to Christmas and then between Christmas and New Year's for a lot of the nation will be a little bit of winter whiplash. It starts with another surge of cold Canadian air into the nation's midsection. This will produce a pretty good swath of snow across North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the Northwest Corn Belt, parts of Iowa, northern and northwestern areas of Illinois. And then into the Great Lakes, another period of snow will develop. Lake effect snows again, and part of that will go into the Northeast. Now, that'll take us up to Christmas with colder than average temperatures in the central and eastern United States, warmer than average across the western United States. Then here comes the whiplash. The pattern's going to reverse. Between Christmas and New Year's, we'll see warmer air from the Pacific spread across the Midwest and the Corn Belt, leading to a rebound in temperatures between Christmas and New Year's in the Midwest and East, while stormy weather starts to return and colder weather to the far West. So a little bit of everything coming over the next couple of weeks.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org. You have a good afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.